serial. Wilkie Collins's detective story continues the search for the missing diamond.
The Moonstone by Wilkie Collins, dramatised by Doug Lucy. Episode 2.
Prior to the arrival of the Moonstone, I was merely old Gabriel Betteridge, house steward to my Lady Verindon. After the disappearance of the cursed jewel, however, I found myself also in the service of the great detective Sergeant Cuff, whose suspicions had only increased the atmosphere of dread within the entire household.
My lady, Sergeant Cuff wishes to speak to you.
Must I see him? Can't you represent me, Gabriel? I'm afraid my nerves are a little shaken, and there's something in the necessity of having that police officer from London in my house which I recoil from. I don't know why. I have a presentiment that he is bringing trouble and misery with him into the house. Very foolish and very unlike me. But so it is.
Shall I tell him you won't see him?
If I must see him, I must. Bring him in, Gabriel, and stay here as long as he stays.
Aye, as you wish, my lady. Sergeant.
Sergeant Cuff.
My lady.
I hope you have no objection to Mr. Betteridge being present. He is my most trusted adviser, and in anything which relates to the household, he is the person whom it might be most profitable to consult.
I would take his presence as a favour.
Then please take a seat. Now, what do you have to say to me?
I've already formed an opinion on this case, which I beg your ladyship's permission to keep to myself for the present. My business now is to mention what I've discovered upstairs in Miss Verinder's sitting room and what I've decided on doing next.
Proceed.
Very well. There is a smear on the newly painted door of Miss Verinder's room, which I've established to have been made between 12 and 3 o'clock in the morning on the night of the diamond's disappearance. One thing is certain, the diamond is missing out of the drawer of the cabinet. Another thing is next to certain. The marks from the smear on the door must be on some article of dress belonging to somebody in this house. We must discover that article of dress before we go a step further.
And that discovery implies, I presume, the discovery of the thief.
I beg your ladyship's pardon. I don't say that the diamond is stolen. I only say at present that the diamond is missing. The discovery of the stained dress may lead the way to finding it.
How do you propose to discover the stained dress?
I propose explaining the case to the servants with a view to inspecting their wardrobes.
But the women will think themselves suspected directly.
Not if I can tell them. I'm going to examine the wardrobes of everybody, from her ladyship downwards, who slept in the house on Wednesday night.
You are certain the investigation is necessary?
I am.
Then you shall speak to the servants with the keys of my wardrobe in your hand. Gabriel, ring for my maid.
Hadn't we better make sure first that the other lady and gentleman in the house will consent to?
There is not the least fear of refusal from any of the three. So, if I send you down Miss Verinder's keys, I presume I shall have done all you want of me for the present.
Oh, one more thing. I should like, if convenient, to have the washing book. If the search leads to nothing, I want to be able to account next for all the linen in the house and for all the linen sent to the wash. If there is an article missing, there will be at least a presumption that it has got the paint stain on it and that it was purposely made away with by the person owning it.
Very well. See to it, Gabriel.
Yes, my lady.
Come. Godfrey.
I beg your pardon for disturbing you, Aunt, but I have business in London with one of my charities. I need to leave by the next train.
Sergeant?
I see no reason why a gentleman such as Mr. Ablewhite should be detained here when he has urgent business elsewhere. No suspicion attaches to him.
What of his wardrobe?
Is your clothing all packed up, sir?
It is. My case is in the hall.
The sergeant needs to inspect the clothing of every person in the house, Godfrey, as part of his investigations.
Oh, of course. I shall leave my case here, and when the sergeant has done, perhaps Betteridge will send it on to me in London?
I will, sir.
That suits me very well.
Goodbye, then, Aunt. I shan't be away from you for very long, I trust.
Goodbye, Godfrey.
Gentlemen.
Now, Gabriel, the washing book.
Yes, my lady. I sent for the book and sought out Mr. Franklin for his assent for his wardrobe to be searched, which was freely given. The washing book was brought to my lady's room by Rosanna Spearman, who had come down to breakfast that morning, miserably pale and haggard, but was now sufficiently recovered to do her usual work. The great Cuff opened the book, understood it perfectly in half a minute, and shut it up again.
Have you anything more to say to me, Sergeant?
Yes. Has the young woman who brought us this book been in your employment as long as the other servants?
Why do you ask?
Because the last time I saw her, she was in prison for theft.
She has put her past behind her, and her conduct in my service has been excellent. You don't suspect her, I hope?
I've already told your ladyship that I don't suspect any person in the House of Thieving up to the present time.
I shall go and ask my daughter for her keys, then.
Well, thank you.
At last the footman came in, not with the keys, but with a morsel of paper for me. There were two or three lines on the paper written by my lady. They informed me that Miss Rachel flatly refused to have her wardrobe examined.
But why, Rachel?
I won't, because I won't. I must yield to force if you use it, but I will yield to nothing else.
I well understood my lady's disinclination to face Sergeant Cuff with such an answer from her daughter as that.
Any news of Miss Verinder's case?
My young lady refuses to have her wardrobe examined.
Ah.
Must the search be given up?
Yes, we must examine all the wardrobes in the house or none.
You don't seem much disappointed.
No, I'm not much disappointed.
Why should Miss Rachel put an obstacle in your way? Isn't it in her interest to help you?
Wait a little, Mr. Bedridge. Wait a little.
So what's to be done next?
Come out to the garden. Let's have a look at the roses.
The nearest way to the garden was by the shrubbery path. And for your better understanding of what is now to come, I may add to this that the shrubbery path was Mr. Franklin's favourite walk.
As things are now, if I was in your place, I'd be at my wit's end.
Well, we won't enter into your young lady's motives. We will only say it's a pity she declines to assist me, because by so doing, she makes this investigation more difficult than it might otherwise have been. We must now try to solve the mystery of the smear on the door in some other way. You're an observant man. Did you notice anything strange in any of the servants after the loss of the diamond? Any one of them unexpectedly out of temper or taken ill?
Well...
Hello.
What's the matter?
Touch of the rheumatics in my back. We shall have a change in the weather before long. This way, Mr. Betteridge.
Sergeant Cuff suddenly led us into the middle of the garden, where we could see round us on every side.
About that young person, Rosanna Spearman. It isn't very likely with her personal appearance that she has got a lover, but I must ask you whether she has provided herself with a sweetheart, poor wretch, like the rest of them.
Why do you ask?
I saw Rosanna Spearman hiding in the shrubberies we went by.
Oh, when you said hello.
Yes, if there's a sweetheart in the case, the hiding doesn't much matter. If there isn't, the hiding is a highly suspicious circumstance, and it will be my painful duty to act on it accordingly.
Rosanna's been mad enough to set her heart on Mr. Franklin Blake. My daughter Penelope's over and over caught her again hanging about here in order to attract his attention.
Does Mr. Franklin have any suspicion of the girl's fancy for him?
Yeah, none at all in my estimation.
He would have found it out fast enough if she'd been nice looking. So, ask you again. Did you notice anything you couldn't account for in any of the servants when the loss of the diamond was first found out?
I noticed nothing. Except that we all lost our heads together, myself included.
Oh, that's all you have to tell me, isn't
it? That is all.
Mr. Betteridge, have you any objection to oblige me by shaking hands? I've taken an extraordinary liking to you.
Why he should have chosen the exact moment when I was deceiving him regarding Rosanna's behaviour to give me that proof of his good opinion is beyond all comprehension. Though I really did feel a little proud of having been one too many for the celebrated Cuff.
Now, Betteridge, let us return indoors. Is there a room I may have use of?
You may use my room, sir.
Thank you. I'd ask you to gather the servants and then send them in one after another in the order of their rank from first to last.
I showed Sergeant Cuff into my room, called the servants together and sent them in one by one as desired. When it was all over, I myself went in and found the sergeant looking out of the window and whistling the last rose of summer.
Any discoveries, sir?
If Rosanna Spearman asks leave to go out, let the poor thing go, but let me know first.
Oh, I hope you don't think Rosanna's concerned in the loss of the diamond.
I think I'd better not tell you, Mr. Betteridge. You might lose your head, you know, for the second time.
Hey, go on.
Father, Rosanna has asked to be allowed out.
Did she say why?
She says her head is bad and she wants a breath of fresh air.
Tell her she may go.
Father?
Do as the sergeant says, go.
Yes, Father.
Which is the servant's way out?
I'll show you.
Thank you. Lock the door of this room, and if anybody asks for me, say I'm in here composing my mind.
Very well.
In order to discover what had caused the sergeant's further suspicion of poor Rosanna, I looked in on the servants' hall. There I found my lady's maid and the housemaid drinking tea.
We neither of us believed in Rosanna's illness,
no.
So during the Thursday afternoon, we tried a door a few times and found it locked.
And when we knocked, there was no answer.
And not a sound inside.
When she came down to tea, then went up to her room again, still out of sorts, we tried a door again, but it was locked.
And the keyhole was stopped up.
So we checked all through the night, and we saw a light under a door at midnight.
And at 4 in the morning, we heard the crackling of a fire.
A fire in a servant's bedroom in the month of June.
At 4 in the morning?
And you told the sergeant all this?
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, yes, yes, sir.
Oh. I walked out into the fine summer afternoon, very sorry for the poor girl, and drifted towards the shrubbery, where I met Mr. Franklin, back from seeing Mr. Godfrey off at the station.
Well, Betteridge, how does the atmosphere of mystery and suspicion in which we are all now living agree with you? You remember that morning when I first came here with the moonstone? I wish to God we had thrown it into the quicksand.
Aye, sir.
What's become of Sergeant Cuff?
Oh. My lady's maid and the housemaid have furnished him with information which has caused him to doubt Rosanna Spearman.
Huh.
She's been out of her room when she's supposed to have been ill, and she's been lighting a fire in there in the middle of the night. And now she's gone out the house again with a sergeant after her.
Well, didn't you tell me this morning that one of the tradespeople declared that he'd met her yesterday when we supposed her to be ill in her room?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So then the girl's attack of illness was a blind to deceive us. She had some guilty reason for going to town secretly. The paint-stained dress is hers, and the fire was lit to destroy it. So Rosanna Spearman has stolen the diamond. Well, I'll go in directly and tell my aunt the turn things have taken.
Not just yet, if you please, sir.
Sergeant?
Why not just yet?
Because, sir, if you tell her ladyship will tell Miss Verinder.
Suppose she does, what then?
Do you think it's wise, sir, to put such a question as that to me at such a time as this?
I suppose you know, Mr. Cuff, that you are treading on delicate ground.
Well, it isn't the first time by a good many hundreds that I find myself treading on delicate ground.
Am I to understand that you forbid me to tell my aunt what has happened?
You are to understand, if you please, sir, that I throw up the case if you tell Lady Verinder or tell anybody what has happened until I give you leave.
Delicate ground, sir. Very delicate.
Mr. Betteridge, you have done a very foolish thing in my absence. You've done a little detective business on your own account. For the future, perhaps you'll be so obliging as to do your detective business along with me.
I dare say I deserve your reproof, Sergeant. But I am not going to help you set traps for Rosanna Spearman for all that. Thief or no thief, I pity her.
And your concern does you credit. Tell me, is there any path in that direction leading to the beach from this house?
Yes, sir. There's a path through the fir plantation.
Show it to me.
And side by side, in the shade of the plantation, Sergeant Cuff and I set forth for the Shivering Sand.
Mr. Betteridge, I see no use in our mystifying one another any longer. You were determined to give me no information to the prejudice of Rosanna Spearman because she's been a good girl to you and because you pity her heartily. But let me tell you, she's not in the slightest danger of getting into trouble.
No.
Not if I fix her with being concerned in the disappearance of the diamond on evidence which is as plain as the nose on your face.
Do you mean that my lady won't prosecute?
I mean that your lady can't prosecute. Rosanna Spearman is simply an instrument in the hands of another person, and Rosanna Spearman will be held harmless for that other person's sake.
Can't you just give that other person a name?
Can't you?
No.
Do you happen to know whether Rosanna Spearman has had a new outfit of linen lately?
Aye. My lady, in recompense for her good conduct, gave her a new outfit not a fortnight since.
But for that outfit, we should have discovered a new nightgown or petticoat among Rosanna's things and have nailed her in that way. Well, you have examined the servants yourself, and you know what discoveries two of them made outside Rosanna's door. Surely you know what the girl was about yesterday after she was taken ill?
Perhaps you will enlighten me.
When the smear on a door is pointed out, she takes the first opportunity of getting to a room, finds a paint stain on a nightgown or petticoat, shams ill, and slips away to the town, getting the materials for making a new garment. Makes it in her room on the Thursday night, lights a fire. Not to burn the old nightgown or petticoat, but to dry and iron the substitute dress after wringing it out. Keeps the stained dress hidden and is at this moment occupied in making away with it in some convenient place on that lonely bit of beach ahead of us.
Pure supposition.
I've traced her this evening to your fishing village and to one particular cottage. She stopped in the cottage for some time and she came out with something under her cloak. Ah, here's the beach. Now, sand, in respect of its printing off people's footsteps, is one of the best detective officers I know. If we don't meet with Rosanna Spearman by coming round on her this way, the sand may well tell us what she's been at. Now, this is a treacherous place. No signs of Rosanna Spearman anywhere on the beach. How does the fishing village bear standing where we are now?
Cobb's Hole bears as near as maybe, due south.
I saw the girl this evening walking northward along the shore from Cobb's Hole. She must have been walking towards this place. Can we reach Cobb's Hole? You know, it's low water by the beach.
Yes.
Then I suggest we step out briskly. I want to find the place where she walked into the sea so as to leave no footprints before it gets dark.
We had walked, I should say, a couple of hundred yards when Sergeant Cuff suddenly went down on his knees. To all appearances, seized with a sudden frenzy for saying his prayers.
Here are a woman's footsteps, Mr. Betteridge. Very confused footsteps, you were pleased to observe. Purposely confused, I should say. She understands the detective virtues of sand as well as I do. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I'm afraid Rosanna is sly. It looks as if she walked through the water from this point till she got to that ledge of rocks behind us and came back the same way. It seems to fit in with my notion that she had something under her cloak, not something to destroy. For where would have been the need of all these precautions to prevent my tracing her?
What, then?
Something to hide is, I think, the better guess of the two. Perhaps if we go on to the cottage, we may find out what that something is.
You don't want me. Now, what good can I do?
If I go with you, I'll go introduced by a justly respected neighbour. A flow of conversation is the necessary result. If I go alone, the people's tongues will be tied at the first question I put to them.
No, that's how you're reasoning.
Come along, then. No time to lose.
The cottage was inhabited by a fisherman named Yolland and his wife and two grown-up children, a son and a daughter. Rosanna's acquaintance with them had begun by means of the daughter, who was afflicted with a misshapen foot, and who was known in our parts as Limping Lucy. On reaching the cottage, the fisherman and his son proved to be out on the boat, and Limping Lucy, always weak and weary, was resting on her bed upstairs. Good Mrs. Yolland received us alone in her kitchen.
Will you have a nip of Dutch gin, Sergeant?
It's most kind, Mrs. Yolland, I will.
Mr. Betteridge?
Not for me, Mrs. Yolland.
So, it's Rosanna you're inquiring of.
It is. There is a prized diamond gone missing at Lady Verinder's house, and some of the cruel servants have cast suspicion on Rosanna Spearman.
Oh, no.
Now, I am contracted to find the lost diamond, but I'm also committed to clearing Rosanna from the unjust suspicions of her enemies in the house.
Oh, bless you, sir.
She has a sincere well-wisher in myself, your obedient servant, but oh, dear me. She will never get on in her present place, and my advice to her is leave it.
Bless your heart alive, she is going to leave it.
So, she means to leave? Mm. What is she going to do when she does leave? The poor creature's got no friends in the world except you and me.
Ah, but she has, though. She came in here this evening and asked to go upstairs by herself into Lucy's room. It's the only room in our place where there's pen and ink. She wanted to write a letter away from the prying and peeping of the servants up at the house. Mm. Who the letter was written to, I can't tell you, but a friend she has got somewhere, I can tell you that. And to that friend, you may depend upon it, she will go.
Soon?
As soon as she can.
No, you must be mistaken. If she'd been going to leave her present situation, she would have mentioned it, and in the first place, to me.
Mistaken? Why, only an hour ago she bought some things she wanted for travelling. Of my own self, Mr. Betteridge, in this very room.
What things?
Well, an old tin case. The sort of thing they use on ships for keeping maps and charts from the wet. She said it would keep her cuffs and collars from being crumpled in a box.
Anything else?
A couple of dog chains for securing the case.
Never heard of a case being corded with chains.
Aye, sir, a strange girl. Good as gold and kinder than a sister to my Lucy, but always a little strange.
Well, Mrs. Yolland, it's time for us to take our leave. I thank you for your kindness to Rosanna. I assure you, I will do everything to aid her cause.
Amen, sir.
Oh, I'm indebted to the fisherman's wife for an entirely new sensation. Mrs. Yolland has puzzled me.
How?
What the girl has done tonight is clear enough, of course. She's joined the two chains and fastened them to the hasp in the tin case. She's sunk the case in the water or the quicksand and made the chain fast to some place under the rocks. And she will leave the case secure till the present proceedings are done, after which she can privately pull it up again. The mystery is, what the devil is she hidden in the tin case?
Can you guess?
It's not the diamonds. The whole experience of my life is at fault if Rosanna Spearman has got the diamond.
The stained dress.
Is anything thrown into that quicksand ever thrown up on the surface again?
Never.
Does Rosanna know that?
She knows it as well as I do.
Then what on earth has she got to do but tie up a bit of stone in the dress and throw it into the quicksand? There isn't the shadow of a reason why she should have hidden it, and yet she must have hidden it. Mr. Betteridge, I must go to Frizinghall tomorrow and discover what she brought in town.
When we got back, the servants were at supper. In the outer yard was the policeman who had been left at Sergeant Cuff's disposal.
Constable Joyce, has Rosanna Spearman returned yet?
Yes, sir, about an hour since.
What were her actions?
Well, she went upstairs to take off her bonnet and cloak. She's now at supper with the rest.
Thank you, Joyce. That window up there, isn't that Miss Verinder's room?
Aye, it is.
The lights pass in backwards and forwards as if something unusual is going on.
Such as?
I would lay you an even sovereign that your young lady has suddenly resolved to leave the house and within the last hour. And I shouldn't be surprised if a scandal was to burst up in the house tonight.
No, no.
Don't be alarmed. I've put the muzzle on worse family difficulties than this in my time.
Sergeant, is it important to the inquiry you're conducting to know beforehand if any person now in this house wishes to leave it?
Most important, my lady.
I have to tell you, then, that Miss Verinder proposes going to stay with her aunt, Mrs. Ablewhite of Frizing Hall. She has arranged to leave us first thing tomorrow morning.
May I ask your ladyship when Miss Verinder informed you that she was going to her aunt?
About an hour since.
Oh. Can I ask you to put off her departure, if possible, till later in the day? I must go to Frizing Hall myself tomorrow morning and I shall be back by 2 o'clock. If Miss Verinder can be kept here till that time, I should wish to say 2 words to her unexpectedly before she goes.
Gabriel, will you inform the coachman that he is to pick Miss Verinder up at 2 o'clock?
I will, my lady.
Have you any more to say, Sergeant?
Only one thing, your ladyship. If Miss Verinder is surprised at this change in the arrangements, please not to mention me as being the cause of putting off her journey.
As you wish. Now, if that's all...
Mr. Cove.
That's a wonderful woman, but for her self-control, the mystery that puzzles you, Mr. Betteridge, would have been at an end tonight.
Damn you! There's something wrong about Miss Rachel, and you've been hiding it from me all this time.
Ah, you've guessed it at last.
Tell me the truth, Sergeant. What do you suspect? It's no kindness to hide it from me now.
I don't suspect, I know.
You mean to tell me Miss Rachel's stolen her own diamond?
Yes, Miss Verinder has been in secret possession of the Moonstone from first to last. Oh. And she has taken Rosanna Spearman into her confidence because she has calculated on our suspecting Rosanna Spearman of the theft. There is the whole case in a nutshell.
Give me your reasons.
You should hear my reasons tomorrow. Let the matter rest for tonight, except...
What now?
I understand there is a traveller who understands Indians and their language.
Mr. Murthwaite.
That's him. Could you furnish me with his address so I might look up that gentleman when I go to Frizing Hall in the morning?
Of course.
And good night, Mr. Betteridge.
Good night.
In the hall, I met Penelope hanging about.
Now, what are you waiting about for, Miguel?
My young lady's bell. Miss Rachel told me to wait for her bell to go unpacking for tomorrow's journey.
Oh, right.
She is in wretchedly low spirits about the changed state of things. Nothing goes right, Father. Nothing is like what it used to be. I feel as if some dreadful misfortune is hanging over us all.
Don't you worry, my dear. We'll soon have things back to normal. There, run along now.
Yes, Father.
Oh, dear. Rosanna, what's the matter, my girl?
Let me go.
Are you ill?
For God's sake, don't speak to me.
Rosanna, you come back here. Good Lord.
Letters. Have you seen anything of Rosanna Spearman?
She just passed me, sir. With a very disturbed face and in a very odd manner.
Oh, I'm afraid that I am innocently the cause of that disturbance, Betteridge.
You, sir?
I can't explain it. But if the girl is concerned in the loss of the diamond, I do believe she was on the point of confessing everything. To me, of all people in the world, not 2 minutes since.
Did you meet her accidentally when you spoke to her?
I was in the billiard room trying to get this miserable business of the diamond out of my mind. I happened to look up, and there she stood at the sight of me, like a ghost. Do you wish to speak to me?
Yes, if I dare...
I don't understand you. Is there anything you want me to do?
He looks at the billiard balls. Anything rather than look at me.
Betteridge, would you tell her that I meant no unkindness? Though I confess I have almost hoped that the loss of the diamond might be traced to her. Not from any ill will to the poor girl, but...
But her recent conduct has raised suspicion.
Yes.
Perhaps the morning will bring some meaning to this behaviour of hers.
Let's hope so, Betteridge. You I can hardly bear this business of the diamond any longer.
Nor me.
Good night, then.
Good night, sir. Oh, Lord. Having closed the house up for the night downstairs, I made my way up to my room. I thought I heard a sound of regular and quiet breathing from the corridor, which connected with Miss Rachel's room. I looked in, and there, coiled up on three chairs placed across the passage, with his respectable black coat rolled up for a pillow, lay and slept Sergeant Cuff. He woke instantly the moment I approached him.
Good night, Mr. Betteridge.
What are you doing here?
Miss Rachel and Rosanna must have communicated privately once already tonight. If they try to communicate again when the house is quiet, I want to be in the way and stop it.
Oh, I wish to God that diamond had never found its way into this house.
So do I. Good night.
Good night.
Nothing happened in the night, and no attempt at communication between Miss Rachel and Rosanna rewarded the vigilance of Sergeant Cuff. Shortly after breakfast, I met Mr. Franklin on his favourite walk in the shrubbery.
Well, Betteridge, how are things set this morning?
Oh, the same, it seems, sir.
Hello. Good morning. Betteridge, Mr. Morning. Franklin?
Have you anything to say to me?
Only that I am an officer of the law, acting here under the sanction of the mistress of the house. Under these circumstances, is it or is it not your duty as a good citizen to assist me with any special information which you may happen to possess?
I possess no special information.
You may save time, sir, if you choose to understand me and speak out.
I don't understand you. And I have nothing to say.
One of the female servants, I won't mention any names, spoke to you privately last night.
I have nothing to say.
At this moment, who should appear at the end of the shrubbery walk but Rosanna Spearman, followed by Penelope, who was evidently trying to make her retrace her steps to the house.
Come back to the house.
Seeing Mr. Franklin was not alone, Rosanna came to a standstill. The sergeant, with his devilish cunning, took on not to have noticed them at all and struck in smoothly with an appearance of continuing the previous conversation.
You needn't be afraid of harming the girl, sir. On the contrary, I recommend you to honour me with your confidence if you feel any interest in Rosanna Spearman.
That is a highly offensive suggestion, sir. I take no interest whatever in Rosanna Spearman.
Rosanna suddenly turned round the moment Mr. Franklin had spoken, and let my daughter take her by the arm and lead her back to the house.
I shall go to Frizinghall now, Mr. Betteridge, and I shall be back before two.
And you must make it right with Rosanna, Betteridge. Sergeant Cuff laid a trap for both of us. On the spur of the moment, I saw no better way out of it than the way I took. It stopped the girl from saying anything, and it showed the sergeant that I saw through him. He was evidently listening when I was speaking to you last night.
Aye. And I'll take the first opportunity of making it right with Rosanna, sir.
Yes. But I see no way out of this business which isn't dreadful to think of unless the diamond is traced to her. And yet I can't and won't help Sergeant Cuff to find the girl out.
Later that morning, Penelope collared me in the house and led me up to Rosanna's room.
You must speak to Rosanna, Father. I'm very uneasy about her.
Is she in her room?
Yes. Mm. I'm afraid Mr. Franklin has hurt Rosanna cruelly without intending it.
What took her into Shrubbery Walk?
Her own madness. She was bent on speaking to Mr. Franklin, come what might of it.
Mm-hmm.
If I could only have got her away before she heard those dreadful words. They seemed to turn her into stone.
Well, here we are.
Come in.
What are you doing, lass?
Sweeping.
Aye. I've got something to say to you from Mr. Franklin. He only said what he said this morning to stop the sergeant's mouth. and is mortified to think he's caused you injury with this necessary deception.
Mr. Franklin is very kind and considerate. Pleased to thank him.
Are you quite sure you understand me, Rosanna?
Quite sure.
Now, come, my girl. Now, I'm your friend, even if you have done wrong. Make a clean breast of it, Rosanna.
Yes, I will.
To my lady?
No. To Mr. Franklin.
But he's gone out for a walk.
It doesn't matter. I shan't trouble him today.
The way to relieve your mind is to speak to the merciful and Christian mistress who's always been kind to you.
No, I know a better way of relieving my mind than that.
What is it?
Please to let me get on with my work. Thank you, Mr. Betteridge.
This is a matter for the doctor to look into. It's beyond me.
But Dr. Candy's very ill.
True. He does have an assistant, though.
Yes, Mr. Jennings.
Aye.
But none of us likes or trusts him. And in her present state, I fear a stranger might do her more harm than good.
Oh, my Lord. I passed the lunchtime hoping to speak to my lady, but she was shut up with Miss Rachel. Then, just before 2, I heard my name called from the drive.
Mr. Betteridge, you there, sir?
Coming! I'm coming! What news from Frizinghall?
I've seen the Indians, and I have no doubt, and neither does Mr. Murthwaite, that they came to this place to steal the Moonstone. And I can tell you one thing, Betteridge. If we don't find the Moonstone, they will.
So much for the Indians. What about Rosanna?
I've traced her to a shop where she bought a piece of long cloth. She's very particular in choosing a certain quality, and she bought enough to make a nightgown.
Whose nightgown?
Her own, to be sure. Her nightgown must have brushed the wet paint on the door, and she couldn't destroy it without first providing another like it to make the inventory of her linen complete.
What proves it was her nightgown?
The material she bought. If it had been Miss Verinder's nightgown, she would have had to buy lace and frilling, and she wouldn't have had time to make it in one night. The pinches. Why then hide the smeared nightgown instead of destroying it? If she won't speak out, the hiding place at the Shivering Sand must be searched.
Yeah. And how are you going to find the spot?
It's a secret which I mean to keep to myself, I'm afraid. One thing at a time. Here's Miss Verinder's carriage. I must attend to her first. Coachman.
Sir?
You will see a friend of mine waiting among the trees on this side of the lodge gate. Without stopping the carriage, my friend will get up in the rumble with you. You have nothing to do but to hold your tongue and shut your eyes. Otherwise, you'll get into trouble.
Yes, sir.
Betteridge?
Out here, my lady.
Are my daughter's bags loaded on the carriage?
They are. Is Miss Rachel ready?
Yes. Here she comes.
Try to forgive me, Mama.
Miss Verinder.
What do you want?
I want to say one word to you, miss, before you go. Your leaving us as things are now puts an obstacle in the way of my recovering your diamond. Please to understand that and now decide for yourself whether you go or stay.
Drive on, James.
Rachel!
Driver!
Rachel, please, please, won't you speak to me? I implore you.
James! Driver!
Aunt, my thanks for all your kindness, but I fear it's time for me to leave.
Let me see you before you go, Franklin.
Do me a last favour, Betteridge. Get me away to the train as soon as you can.
Oh, I will, sir. There's a time for everything, Mr. Cuff. This isn't a time for whistling.
No, it's time to take this business in hand, now, without sparing anybody. Your young lady has got a travelling companion in her mother's carriage, Mr. Betteridge, and the name of it is the Moonstone.
What?
Where's Joyce? Joyce! Where is Rosanna Spearman?
I can't account for it, sir. I'm very sorry, but somehow or other...
She didn't tell me that you've let her give you the slip.
Well, there are so many such passages in the lower part of the house.
How long is it since you missed her?
9 an hour since, sir.
You can go back to your regular business at Friars and all, Mr. Joyce. Good day. Mr. Betteridge, I need to speak to the servants again.
Oh, for goodness sake, why?
This is how it stands. Rosanna has either gone direct to Friars and all, or she's gone first to visit her hiding place at the Shivering Sand. I need to find out which of the servants saw the last of her before she left the house.
We best go inside, then.
Now, Miguel, tell the sergeant what you know about Rosanna's disappearance.
I saw her slip out with a letter in her hand and stop the butcher's man at the back door. She asked him to post the letter when he got back to Frizing Hall. He looked at the address and said it was a roundabout way of delivering a letter directed to Cobb's Hole to post it at Frizing Hall, and that, moreover, on a Saturday, which would prevent the letter from arriving till Monday. Rosanna answered that that was of no importance. She just needed to be sure the man would do as she told him. He promised he would, and he drove off. I was called back to work, and nobody's seen anything of Rosanna since.
Thank you.
That'll be all, Gil. Go on.
Thank you, sir.
Well?
Well, I must go to Frizing Hall. The memorandum of the hiding place is in that letter. I must see the address at the post office, and if it is the address I suspect, I shall pay our friend, Mrs. Yolland, another visit on Monday next.
The news of Rosanna's disappearance had spread among the outdoor servants, and one of them, Duffy, a quick little imp, had seen the girl pass him in the fir plantation, not walking, but running in the direction of the seashore. Cuff and the boy struck out for the sands at a rate that my legs had no hope of matching. And then, shortly, Duffy came running back to ask for one of Rosanna Spearman's boots. This he was given, and he ran off again. And this time, I decided to follow on.
Sergeant Cuff!
Keep on that side. And come on down here to me.
See here.
This boot is a perfect match for these footprints, but they all point the same way, straight to the rocks. Hunt as I might, I can find no sign anywhere of the footsteps walking from them. She'd been back at the hiding place and some fatal accident has happened to her on those rocks. It must have happened on the quicksand side of the rocks.
No accident, Mr. Cuff. When she came to this place, she came weary of her life to end it here.
How do you know?
Sometimes, Mr. Betteridge, I think that my grave is waiting for me here. I think the place has laid a spell on me. Look at the quicksand. It looks as if it had hundreds of suffocating people under it, all struggling to get to the surface, and all sinking lower and lower in the dreadful deeps. Throw a stone in, Mr. Betteridge, and let's see the sand suck it down.
Well, could a boat have taken her off in such weather as this, from those rocks where her footmarks stopped?
No boat that ever was built could have got to her through those waves.
And she can't have left this place by land.
Look, alongside of the spit, there's a shelf of rock, just running under the sand. If she slipped by accident from off the spit, she fell where there's a foothold at the bottom. At a depth, I'd barely cover her to the waist. She must have waded or jumped into the deep so she wouldn't be missing now. Oh, no accident, sir. The deeps of the quicksand have got her. And they've got her by her own act.
I'll come along, my friend. Let's return to the house.
Don't touch me. It's the dread of you that's driven her to it.
You're wrong, Mr. Betteridge, but it'll be time enough to speak of it when we're indoors again. Come.
You are answerable for this, Sergeant. Gabriel, give that wretch his money and release me from the sight of him.
I'm no more answerable for this distressing calamity, my lady, than you are. If, in half an hour from this, you still insist on my leaving the house, I will accept your ladyship's dismissal, but not your ladyship's money.
Very well. I acknowledge that I might have spoken over hastily. Would you consent to accept your fee and leave the matter where it stands now?
No, my lady. My fee is paid for doing my duty. I decline to take it until my duty is done. When I came here, I undertook to throw the necessary light on the matter of the missing diamond. I'm now ready and waiting to redeem my pledge. Let your ladyship decide after that whether you do or do not allow me to go on. I shall then have done what I undertook to do, and I'll take my fee.
What is it you want to say to me?
I've heard a motive assigned for the young woman's suicide, which may possibly be the right one. My own opinion points the other way, however. Some unbearable anxiety in connection with the missing diamond has, I believe, driven the poor creature to her own destruction. And I think, with your ladyship's permission, that I can lay my hand on a person who is capable of deciding whether I am right or wrong.
Is the person now in the house?
The person has left the house, my lady.
Do you refer to my daughter?
I do.
After what you have just said, you know as well as I do that you have gone too far to go back. I owe it to myself and I owe it to my child to insist on your remaining here and to insist on your speaking out. You suspect Miss Verinder of deceiving us all by secreting the diamond for some purpose of her own. Is that true?
Quite true, my lady.
Very well. Now, I have to tell you, as Miss Verinder's mother, that she is absolutely incapable of doing what you suppose her to have done. I know my child.
Well said, my lady.
For the last 20 years, I've been largely employed in cases of family scandal. It is well within my experience that young ladies of rank and position do occasionally have private debts, which they dare not acknowledge to their nearest relatives and friends. Miss Verinder has behaved most oddly since my arrival, and every action has served to create suspicion on my part.
The circumstances have misled you.
Who would be the very person to help Miss Verinder in raising money privately on the diamond? Rosanna Spearman. No young lady in Miss Verinder's position could manage such a risky matter as that herself. A go-between she must have. And who so fit, I ask again, as Rosanna Spearman? She had relations, to my certain knowledge, with one of the very few men in London who would advance a large sum on such a notable jewel as the Moonstone without asking awkward questions or insisting on awkward conditions. Now, there is only one course of action among many that I feel your ladyship will accept as the way forward in this matter.
Which is?
I want to tell Miss Verinder, without a word of warning, of Rosanna's death, on the chance that her own better feelings will hurry her into making a clean breast of it. Does your ladyship accept?
I do. But I claim the right, as her mother, of putting her to the test for myself. You will remain here, if you please, and I will go to Frizinghall.
But, my lady, it's such a wet and windy night.
Order my pony chaise immediately, Gabriel, and my waterproofs.
Yes, my lady.
You may rely on two things, Sergeant. I will try the experiment on my daughter as boldly as you could try it yourself, and I will inform you of the result, either personally or by letter, before the last train leaves for London tonight.
As your ladyship wishes.
The pony chaise returned a good half hour before I'd ventured to expect it. My lady had decided to remain for the present at her sister's house. The groom brought two letters, one addressed to Mr. Franklin and the other to me. A cheque which dropped out when I opened it informed me that Sergeant Cuff's dismissal from the inquiry after the Moonstone was now a settled thing. I went to find the sergeant.
Ah, you've heard from her ladyship. Have I anything to do with it, Mr. Betteridge?
You shall judge for yourself, Sergeant.
My good Gabriel, I request that you will inform Sergeant Cuff that I have performed the promise I made to him with this result, so far as Rosanna Spearman is concerned. Miss Verinder solemnly declares that she has never spoken a word in private to Rosanna. They never met even accidentally on the night when the diamond was lost, and no communication of any sort whatever took place between them from the Thursday morning when the alarm was first raised in the house to this present Saturday afternoon when Miss Verinder left us. After telling my daughter suddenly and in so many words of Rosanna Spearman's suicide, this is what has come of it. On two occasions before my daughter left my house, I privately warned her that she was exposing herself to suspicion of the most unendurable and most degrading kind. I have now told her that my apprehensions have been realized. Her answer to this is that she owes no money privately to any living creature, and the diamond is not now, and never has been, in her possession since she put it into her cabinet on Wednesday night. She maintains an obstinate silence when I ask her if she can explain the disappearance of the diamond, and she refuses with tears when I appeal to her to speak out for my sake.
Mama, the day will come when you will know why I am careless about being suspected, and why I am silent even to you. I have done much to make my mother pity me. Nothing to make my mother blush for me.
Please, Gabriel, to read my letter to the sergeant, and then place in his hands the cheque which I enclose. In resigning all further claims on his services, I remain convinced of his honesty and his intelligence, but I am more firmly persuaded than ever that the circumstances in this case have fatally misled him.
What have you to say to that?
We shall have more detective business on our hands, sir, before the Moonstone is many months older.
I consider that an insult to my lady and her daughter.
Mr. Betteridge, consider it as a warning to yourself, and you will be nearer the mark. Now, I'll tell you at parting of three things which will happen in the future and which I believe will force themselves on your attention, whether you like it or not.
Go on.
First, you will hear something from the Yollands when Rosanna's letter is delivered to them on Monday next. Miss Rachel's assertion of her innocence leaves Rosanna's conduct entirely without explanation. Second, you will hear of the three Indians again. You will hear of them in the neighbourhood if Miss Rachel remains here in Yorkshire. You will hear of them in London if Miss Rachel goes to London. Third and last, you will sooner or later hear something of a moneylender in London. Give me your pocketbook and I'll make a note for you of his name and address so that there may be no mistake if the thing really happens. Mr. Septimus Luca, Middlesex Place, Lambeth, London. And those are the last words on the subject of the Moonstone which I shall trouble you with for the present. Time will show whether I'm right or wrong. In the meantime, sir, I carry away with me a sincere personal liking for you. If we don't meet again before my retirement takes place, I hope you will come and see me in a little house near London, which I've got my eye on. There will be grass walks, Mr. Betteridge, I promise you, in my rose garden.
Oh, dear.
Betteridge?
Sir?
Is the pony chaise ready?
Have you really made up your mind, sir?
Yes.
Why not wait a day or two longer? Give Miss Rachel another chance.
Read this from Lady Verinder.
You will wonder, I dare say, at my allowing my own daughter to keep me perfectly in the dark. A diamond worth £20,000 has been lost, and I am left to infer that the mystery of its disappearance is no mystery to Rachel, and that some incomprehensible obligation of silence has been laid on her. She is in a condition of nervous agitation pitiable to see. And my present idea is to take Rachel to London. My dear Franklin, the valuable assistance which you rendered to the inquiry after the lost jewel is still an unpardoned offence in the present dreadful state of Rachel's mind. She's not to be reasoned with. She can only be pitied. I am grieved to have to say it. But for the present, you and Rachel are better apart.
Ah, you know the proverb, sir. When things are at their worst, they're sure to mend.
When I came here from London with that horrible diamond, I don't believe there was a happier household in England than this. Look at it now, Betteridge. Scattered, disunited. The very air of the place is poisoned with mystery and suspicion. Do you remember that morning when we talked about my Uncle Herncastle and his birthday gift? The Moonstone has served the Colonel's vengeance by a means which the Colonel himself never dreamt of. And now, sir, I must go.
Tell us where you're going to, sir.
I'm going to the devil.
God bless you, sir. Go wherever you may.
In episode 2 of The Moonstone by Wilkie Collins, Lady Verinder was played by Eleanor Braun, Sergeant Cuff by Kenneth Cranham, Franklin Blake by Paul Rees, Rachel Verinder by Jasmine Hyde, and Betteridge by Steve Hodson. Rosanna Spearman was played by Alison Pettit, Godfrey Ablewhite by Mark Straker, Mr. Murthwaite by Paul Bhattacharjee, Penelope by Claire Corbett, Sergeant Joyce by Stephen Critchlow, and Mrs. Yolland by Carolyn Pickles. The Moonstone was recorded on location by Lucinda Mason Brown, with original music by David Chilton. It was dramatised by Doug Lucy and produced by Janet Whittaker. The Moonstone was a Goldhawk Essential production for BBC Radio 4.
And you can hear episode 3 at the same time next Sunday. After the news, Michael Arditi and Sebastian Foulkes are both talking to Mariella Frostrup, singly, not together, for Open Book. That's in a couple of minutes.
It's probably about once a week when we deal with something which is difficult and international. 999 calls locally, 20 to 30 a day, I would say.
And what exactly can you see?
Accounts of extraordinary telephone calls.
I could hear wind in the background and I could sort of then start picturing him on this boat that was sinking.
Life-changing conversations.
I put the phone down and I think I said to my colleague next to me, something weird's just happened in Paris.
The Call on BBC Radio 4, Tuesday mornings at 9:30.